Yeah, we had concluded in Agadata on Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah that were saved from a fiery furnace. But now the Gemara goes on. It's not clear what the association is. The Gemara goes on to discuss Psukim about the Mashiach. Now again, it's not clear what the connection is. Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown into the fiery furnace during the 70 years of the Babylonian exile. But we bring in something about the future Geula, because we say that all of the miracles that are done to the righteous are kind of predictions for the future miracles Hashem will do for us. So here we have something from Megillas Rus. We just read Megillas Rus a few weeks ago on Shavuos. And if you remember, when Rus spent the night with Boaz to convince him that he should marry her, so in the morning, it says he gave her six barleys, Saorim. Now the Gemara wants to know, what does it mean, six barleys? It says, Vataymer, and Rus reported to Naomi, Sheish hasaorim ha'ela nasan li. Boaz gave me six saorim, six barley. So the Gemara wants to know, what do you mean, six barley? My sheish saorim. Now, ilema sheish saorim mamish. One possibility is he gave her six kernels of barley. But that's worthless. Six kernels of barley, you can't, I mean, that's less than a mouthful. Chidarko shel Boaz, laseis matan hasheish sa'irim. Is Boaz going to give somebody six kernels of barley? Ella, the alternative interpretation is six measures of barley. Now, the standard measure of barley is a saw. That's like a bushel. So he gave her six bushels of barley? How would she be able to carry that? That's too heavy. V'chidarka shel isha, can a woman carry sheish sa'in? So mimanefshach, what is the meaning that he gave her six barleys? Barley corns would be too little, and barley bushels would be too much. So the Gemara actually says he gave her six barley corns, but it wasn't for food, but it was a prophetic message that he wanted to communicate to her. Ramez Ramazla, he is Merames to her. Shasidin Shisha Bonim Lotseis Mimena. In other words, he's giving her a prophecy that from their union, from their marriage, there will be six very righteous people that will come forth from their marriage, descendants. Shem Misborchin B'sheish Brachos. And those descendants will have six blessings. So it's a double six. Six descendants who will have six blessings. Who are these six descendants? Elohim. David. Because remember, David is Rus's great grandson. The eventual Mashiach, who is descended from David. And then, at an earlier point, Daniel, who was saved from the lion's den, and Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah that were saved from the Kifshan Ha'esh. So these are six. And now we're going to show how each of these six people is given six blessings. David is described with six blessings. Dichsiv, Vayan Echad Me'an Ha'arim, Vayomer, Hinei Ra'isi Ben Li'ishe V'Slach. If you remember initially when David was anointed king, you have to remember the book of Shmuel. So Shmuel was told to go to Yishai's family and choose one of Yishai's sons to be king. And Yishai didn't even bring David there. Yishai brought his other sons. And none of the sons were the person that Hashem had chosen. So then somebody said, oh, there's another son to Yishai, Beis Halachmi in Beis Lechem. And this is how David was described. Yodea Nagein. He knows how to play music. Gibor Chayil, he is courageous in war. Ish Milchama, he can fight well. Navon Davar, he has a deep understanding. Ish Toar, now literally this means he's a handsome person. And Hashem Imo, and Hashem is with him. Now the Gemara is going to explain that each of these things are spiritual qualities, not just physical. The Yomer of Yehuda Amarav, Kol ha pasuk hazer loy omro doyeg ela b'loshen hara. This pasuk was recited by a man called Dayeko Adaimi, who was an enemy of David, and all of his compliments were intended to be something bad about David. You'll see. In other words, he said something good, but he meant it in a bad way. Yodea Nagain, the first statement, Yodea Nagain, that he knows how to play music. That's, well, we'll see. Actually, the Gemara is not explaining how Doeg meant it negatively, but we're first going to explain it positively in a spiritual way. Yodea Nagain, he knows how to play music, is interpreted spiritually, Yodea Lisho. He knows how to ask deep questions in Torah. Again, it's an interesting idea that a deep question in Torah is like the music of Torah. Gibor Chayil. He is valorous and courageous. That refers to Yodea Lahashiv. He knows how to answer questions. Ish Milchama, he's a man of war. That's the war of Torah, that when people are discussing Torah, he can fight, he can assert his position. She Yodea Lisa Velitain, he knows how to carry himself to Milchamta Shel Torah, in the wars of Torah. Navon Davor, a man of understanding, that means, in a positive sense, we haven't yet shown what Doeg means to do with this. Shemevin Davor Mitoch Davor. What does that mean? Not only does he know the Torah, but he's able to learn out a new thing from the old thing, right? Bina is the quality that from one thing you understand other things. Not everybody has that quality. A person could know a lot of things, but he doesn't know how to apply it to a new situation. Ish Toar, what does it mean, a handsome person? So this means Mare Panim Bahalacha. It doesn't refer to him being handsome, but it means he makes the halacha beautiful, meaning to say he can explain the halacha so you can understand it, so it makes sense to you. And finally, Hashem Imo, Hashem is with him. That means that whatever his maskana is, Halacha kamosa b'chol makam, the halachas like him. Okay. So Doeg HaAdaimi was enumerating these traits of David to Shaul HaMelech. And Bakulu, as he was going through the list, Omar Lei, Shaul said, hey, my son is just as good. Yonasan Bini, come on, my son Yonasan. Again, the Gemara is explaining that Doeg is complimenting David, but Doeg is complimenting David so Shaul will get jealous, because Doeg is telling Shaul, you're going to be replaced, or your son is going to be replaced by David. So Doeg's kavana in enumerating all of these qualities is to make Shaul angry. But Shaul was initially not angry, because every single quality that David had, his own son had. So he says, that's fine, my son is that as well. Because Doeg hated David, and Doeg wanted Shaul to kill David, and Doeg was the one that incited, right? So therefore, he's communicating to Shaul that you have a rival who wants to take over. So Shaul was initially not so concerned about this, because Shaul says, oh, my son is just as good, what's the problem? But the last one didn't work. Even the Omar Lei, when Doeg said, Hashem Imo, Hashem is with him, meaning to say, the halacha is always like David. All the chachamim agree with David's maskanas. That already was frustrating to Shaul, because Shaul himself, even though he was very great in Torah, was not zeicha to the madrega where he was able to come to a final halacha. And therefore, once he realized David had a quality that he didn't, that Shaul didn't have, that created jealousy and hatred. Dibididei nami lo havavei. Shaul did not have the quality of halacha kamoso. Chol shadate, Shaul was very depressed. V'niskane bo, he became jealous of David and wanted to kill him. Now, how do we know that Shaul did not have this problem? Shaul was very great in Torah learning, but Shaul was indecisive. That's the idea here. Because he was indecisive, he could not come to a halacha lemaisa. There's a special madrega that after you look at all the different shitas, you're able to see what the din is. Shaul could not come to a maskana. Again, that was reflected in his leadership as well. He was not able to take a firm position on things. That's why when he was told to kill all of the Amalekites and the sheep, and the people told didn't want to, Shaul was not able to follow it out.
I guess based on this, he would have to kill Doeg for trying to go against him, for putting him down.
David rather killed. Who?
Shaul.
Well,
Can kill Doeg for being offensive towards him.
Well, I mean, no, but I think not. Shaul is asking Doeg about David.
And right, Doeg is trying to put Shaul down.
Well, yeah, but he's doing it in the context of giving Shaul a report.
No,
a report. Shaul wants an accurate report. If the report is negative, you don't kill the messenger for giving a negative report. Now, the Gemara says, where do we see that Shaul was indecisive? It's an interpretation. The b'Shaul kisiv u'b'chol asher yifne yarshia. In every place that he turned. Now, Yarshia would normally mean he made evil, but that's actually a positive term. He defeated his enemies. That, you know, anywhere he turned, he would defeat you. But we're interpreting it to mean every place he turned was confusion, meaning he didn't come to a maskana, as opposed to David, where it says, Kol asher yifne, every place David turned, Yatzliach, he was successful. And the difference between Yarshia and Yatzliach in Torah learning is Yarshia means you can bring up all the different opinions, all the different swaras, all the different ways of looking at things, but you cannot come to a maskana. To be Matzliach means you come to a definite conclusion. Yep.
You have to say that being indecisive in that context is negative.
It is a negative.
So now, that's
correct. Now, that's a special madrega. We're not saying a person is a bad person because of that, but there's a special koach that even if a person is a Talmud Chacham, even if a person learns, a person knows, but if a person cannot have the clarity of translating it into a practical conclusion, then he hasn't been zeicha to the highest madrega of Hashem Imo, Hashem being with you. And that was the difference in madrega between David and Shaul. And that, when Doeg reports that, that was the basis of Shaul's jealousy for David. Now, the question is, how do we know that Doeg is the reporter? The pasuk doesn't say Doeg, it just says a young man. Echad mehana'arim. How do we know that this was Doeg? So the Gemara's answer is, it says Echad mehana'arim, one of the na'arim, and that's interpreted to mean Miyuchad. Echad means the unique young man, and Doeg was the main advisor. Now, just to remind you, Doeg not only incited this initial jealousy, but if you recall, when David is running away from Shaul and David seeks refuge in Nov, which is the city of the Kohanim near Yerushalayim, it is Doeg who tells Shaul that David was given hospitality in this city, and because of that, Shaul wipes out the whole city. Right, so Doeg is very, very involved in creating this jealousy and in spurring Shaul on to even violence and murder. Okay. Yeah.
Was it justified?
What justified?
To wipe out the whole city.
Absolutely not. It was a very great Avera. It was a very great Avera.
Just because of that, you didn't find any other excuses?
Well, the excuse always was that since Shaul is still king, so anyone that's aiding David is going against the king. But that simply wasn't true. Number one, they weren't going against the king because
it's not the whole city. Maybe if you one family hit him.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a huge city. Altogether, like 35 Kohanim. It was a small.
So they all knew about it.
Yeah, they all knew about it. It was a small village, but he still killed him out. That was a very great sin. Okay. So the Gemara says, Vayter, we're going to see Vayter, that Doeg is one of the people who do not have a share in Olam Haba. Doeg is a very bad guy.
And Shaul too?
Shaul not. Because once again, Shaul is a hard character to understand. Shaul seems to have been suffering from great depression and anxiety because he lost Ruach HaKodesh, and this was very painful to him. So Shaul is almost not completely in control.
But somebody can tell you to kill somebody, but at the end of the day, it's the killer who is responsible, not the one who tells you.
Well, in Hashem's judgment, though, things could be very different. In Hashem, that might be true in a human court, because we can only look at the action, we can't look at the thought. But in the heavenly courts, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the motivations and looks at the heart, and Doeg was just stirring up trouble because of Rishus. Shaul was not in such a good condition. Shaul was very depressed. At one point, when Shaul saw that Yonasan, his own son, was befriending David, he threw a spear at his own son. He would have killed his own son. He was so angry, so enraged. Right, so Shaul was not, again, I mean, I don't want to say he was mentally ill. It was a spiritual sickness, but the Ruach HaKodesh, see, once you have, this is not something we know, we don't have this madrega, but when you have Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah, and you have the sweetness of the intimacy with Hashem, and then it's taken away from you, that is an unbelievable pain. We don't even understand it. It's an unbelievable pain. And that pain can destroy you from within. It's the pain, I mean, I'll give you an example. It's a totally opposite example. Imagine the pain of withdrawal from cocaine. I shouldn't even compare it. But, you know, a person gets, it's an artificial pleasure, it's not a real pleasure. A person gets a real pleasure from a drug. And then it's taken away. Your body suffers tremendous pains of withdrawal. Well, in Kedusha, this exists, you know, a trillion times more, infinitely times more, that when you have the sweetness, the real sweetness of being connected to Hashem, and that's taken away from you, you have tremendous pain, and you lash out, and you destroy. He lost it because he didn't carry out Hashem's commandments. Hashem commanded him to wipe out Amalek, and he didn't. So he lost it. He lost his malchus because of his sin. There, too, it was indecisiveness a little bit. But the point was, it had a secondary effect. Not only did he lose his malchus, he also lost Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh, and that was the thing that really broke him.
Why would somebody who is indecisive as a king?
Well, why what? Why
choose Shaul as a king in the first place?
Well, apparently he did have spiritual greatness. He was the greatest person at the time. But he had a certain flaw, that he was indecisive. He was indecisive, or even overly humble, the way it's sometimes described, meaning to say he felt if other people, you know, a king and even a great posek should of course be modest. You have to be modest, but you have to know your worth, meaning if you come to a decision, this is the decision. You don't keep on saying when somebody criticizes your decision, oh, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's not right, you know, etc. You have to be firm. Shaul's chisaron was he was not firm in those things. But what I'm saying is, what really got him broken was not the loss of the Malchus. What really got him broken was the loss of the Ruach HaKodesh. And in many ways, that's it. You're making a very interesting point. Although it is Shaul that actually gave the order to wipe out the Kohanim, is considered to be almost more Doeg's Aveira than it is Shaul's Aveira, because Doeg was the instigator, the mastermind. Doeg was playing on Shaul's insecurities and his fears. So it's Doeg that's really considered to be the Russia, much more than Shaul. Okay. So we showed, in other words, remember we're trying to explain the Agadita that when Boaz gave Ruth the 6 barley corns, it was a remez to 6 descendants who will have 6 brachos. So, so far we mentioned David as the first, and David has these 6 qualities. The next one is Mashiach. Now we know Mashiach in Isaiah's prophecies, Yeshayahu's prophecies, is described with 6 qualities. We actually recite this pasuk, if you remember, before laning on Yom Tov. So it says, V'nacha olav ruach Hashem, the spirit of Hashem shall rest on the Mashiach. Now what is that spirit of Hashem? 6 components. Ruach Chachma Ubina, the spirit of wisdom and understanding. That's 2. Ruach Eitza Ugevura, the spirit of counsel, being able to advise people. And Gevura, courage. That's 4. And the next one? Ruach Das V'Yiras Hashem, the ruach of intimate spiritual knowledge. and Yiras Hashem, Reverend. These are the six, right? In other words, Chachma, Bina, Eitza, Gavura, Das, and Yiras Hashem. Now, before we get out, remember we have all these other descendants to look at, but before we get to the other descendants, the Gemara digresses. Since we darshan's part of this verse about Mashiach, we go to the next part of the verse. The verse goes on and says, Harecho, Harecho is Reach, he will smell Yiras Hashem. And this means, the Gemara says an amazing thing, that the Mashiach will be so attuned to the Ratzon Hashem that if two people come before him and he has to decide who's right in a Din Torah, he will just smell the truth. He won't even have to mentally think it out. He won't have to hear the tainus. It's like he can smell MS and Sheker. Right? It smells like a lie, or it smells like the truth.
He will be the prophet, or he will have Ruach Kodesh?
Well, here it describes Ruach HaKodesh, but in this case it means prophecy. The Rambam's lashon is that Mashiach will be a prophet almost as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Almost as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. So he'll be the second of all the prophets. Yeah. And that's what Rava says. Moirach, he will smell and be able to judge cases. Okay. So now, again, before we get to the other descendants, we're digressing a little bit. And after we discussed a true Mashiach, we now discuss, in the time of the Gemara at least, the most famous of the false Mashiachs. Now we know that the most famous of the false, well, we'll see if it's a false Mashiach or not, was Bar Kokhba. Now remember the history here. The Romans destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash in the year 70. Now, the Jews still lived in Israel. They were not exiled. We call it a galus, but really it was a korban. But they lived. They weren't allowed. They were even allowed to live in Yerushalayim, although the city was destroyed. So they were living in a destroyed city, but people could live there. Now, what happened was this. Again, indeed, it is the case that thousands of Jews were murdered. And many were taken into slavery as well. So there was a galus. Jews were taken into slavery, but many Jews did manage to live in Israel. But then, around 60 years later, the year 130, from 70 to 130, there was a second revolt of the Jews against the Romans. And that's called the Bar Kokhba revolt. And that lasted for several years, and that was actually very successful for a long time, till the Emperor Hadrian crushed the revolt in 135. Now, the leader of this revolt was a man whose name was Ben Kuziva, Shimon Ben Kuziva. But Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, believed that this man was the Mashiach that Hashem is sending to redeem Bnei Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Akiva renamed him, gave him a nickname, Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba means the son of a star. Based on the pasuk we read in last week's Parsha, that Mashiach is described as a star coming from heaven. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, it's not so pushy, is Bar Kokhba a false Mashiach? Now, if that's the case, Rabbi Akiva was deceived. Or there's another possibility, that he could have been the Mashiach, but we were not worthy of it, so he was killed. Meaning there can be somebody who's... Yeah. Huh? That's right. That's right. There can be a real Mashiach who will be killed before he's able to do what he has to do, and then Hashem will have to make somebody else Mashiach. Now, even with Chabad, I'll tell you. I tell you, was the Lubavitcher Rebbe Mashiach or not? But you know, well, killed, okay, but I know that's what Chabad said, but Pashas, there's no difference if you kill or you die. The basic idea is that you need two things. You need the person that Hashem chooses as Mashiach, and you need the generation to be worthy. If the generation is not worthy, then even if the person is Mashiach, he will die or be killed. and Hashem will have to pass the throne to somebody else. Whose opinion is what?
Is that we can have possible Mashiach that did not become Mashiach fully?
Well, I'm not saying he'll come back. Hashem will choose somebody else.
No, I'm saying whose opinion is that there is a possibility that the person could have been Mashiach.
This is interpreted in the Bar Kokhba. Yeah. So in other words, the question is, Rabbi Akiva thought Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. But Bar Kokhba was killed in war, and Bar Kokhba didn't build the base of Mashiach. And Lehepach, when Hadrian crushed, this was in Beitar, when Hadrian crushed the Bar Kokhba revolt, many more Jews were killed than were even killed when the base of Mashiach was destroyed. Many more were killed. And it's also on Tisha B'Av, right? The crushing of Beitar was also on Tisha B'Av. Then Jews were not allowed to live in Yerushalayim. After the Chorban, they were allowed to live. After Beitar, for 200 years, Jews did not live in Yerushalayim. The Romans turned it into an idolatrous city, Aelia Capitolina, for more than 200 years.
It's in the same place as Vishalat now?
Same place. If you go to the old city, there's a fancy plaza they have called the Cardo.
Uh-huh.
Fancy stores. It's a lower level. That is the remnants of the Roman marketplace. When Jews were not allowed in Jerusalem. The only time in our history since David HaMelech conquered Jerusalem. Well, as you say, plus the years between 48 and 67. The 200 years plus the 19 years, 48 and 67, that Jews were not allowed. Between 1948. Well, that's right. In 1948, what happened was the Jordanians took the old city. The War of Independence. In the War of Independence, we lost the old city of Jerusalem, the Har HaBayis, the old city of Jerusalem. So between 1948 and 1967, we had this part of, actually not this part either, but you know, we had a lot of Yerushalayim, but a lot of Jerusalem was in the hands of the Jordanians. We got it back in 1967. Now, there were a few Jews, but it's very fascinating. I've heard stories from people. There were a few Jews who snuck into Jordan. They couldn't use an Israeli passport, and they couldn't notice we'd even be Jewish. But, you know, if they were American citizens and their name was Smith or something, they could travel to Jordan. An American citizen could travel to Jordan. And they actually talked about going into Jordan. I mean, Mamish, if they would be discovered, they would be shot on the spot. Mm-hmm. Mamish coming into Jordan and davening at the Kotel. How do you daven? Now, what was the Kotel then? The Kotel wasn't like it was now. There was no kotel at all. Just houses all over the place. And you manage to go into somebody's crowded backyard. And, you know, they're going to wonder, what are you doing there? What are you looking for? Are you going through garbage there? You know, there was no kotel. I mean, there's no kotel and the like. But, and the person talked about this, I remember hearing a talk from someone, how he snuck in and how scared he was. And he really, his life was...
What year was it?
Well, this was probably 1965, meaning we in the Six-Day War was in 1967, so this was 65. So there were a few Jews who did it, but they couldn't look Jewish, they couldn't wear yarmulkes, they couldn't have a sitter, you know, anything like that. But they snuck in as American citizens or whatever.
Well, the Muslims also were had covers.
Muslims were what?
Muslims were also had covers.
You can wear a head cover. You wear a hat. You wear a hat. I understand. But still, it's a strange thing. Since, I mean, the Western Wall was not a prayer for Muslims. So, you know, if somebody's hanging around there, you know, they're going to wonder, like, what do you want? You know, why are you in my backyard? I mean, it was a prophet, you know.
It was very possible that there was time between the generation was ready. Would you ever have opposite situation where the generation would be ready and a person who it's passed on to is not Jew?
Well, that's hard to imagine because the way this works is there has to be somebody at every moment of time who could be the Mashiach, because at whatever point of time we're Zocha, Hashem could make it happen. So it might be, so even if you're going to say that Mashiach is now a baby, there has to be some adult who could do it for the next 10 years until he's ready.
It's dependent on
the generation. So that actually means there could be overlapping Mashiach. So there might be a baby who will be Mashiach in 10 years, but if we're Zocha now, before that, there's somebody else.
You see? But that's like a limited time.
Yes.
So
there's never a time. There's never a time when there's not a Mashiach.
I think he's asking whether there is possibility that an individual will not, will not be proactive in terms of his.
Well, here's the thing. The person who's a designated Mashiach doesn't necessarily know it yet. Meaning, it's not like I know, not me, but you know,
I
know I'm Mashiach, but I haven't gotten the message. Until the generation is worthy. The person himself doesn't necessarily.
But maybe when the way Rabbi Akiva, the Barkova goes, is that the generation was not worth it, but he was proactive.
That's correct. And that's why Rabbi Akiva thought he was Mashiach, because Rabbi Akiva
maybe
sees.
He was stimulating the action.
Right,
maybe
Rabbi
Akiva like, or anybody else was proactive, but the generation was not ready. Yeah.
That's correct. So I have no problem. So the Etzem, I have absolutely no problem with the fact.